Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. We are a podcast for theme park fans. So if you're into theme parks, roller coasters, all things like that, you are definitely in the right place. I'm Bex and I'm usually with Kev. It is, however, his birthday this week, so he's not with us. But we've got a bit of a special episode because a few weeks back, Kev had a chat with a guy we've had on the podcast before, actually. He's called Mark Rosenzweig, and he's based over in America. He's an American roller coaster enthusiast, but he also works in the industry as well. He has got years and years and years of experience working in the theme park industry. He currently works for a company called 3DX Scenic, which you're going to hear all about and what they do. But they basically do some big large-scale theming installations into parks. And he's just generally a really great guy who is really knowledgeable, especially about all the goings-on in theme parks in America now and going back as well. He's been an enthusiast for so long. We've done a previous episode with him, which I'd really recommend that you go back and listen to. But for now, I'm going to leave you with Kev chatting to Mark from 3DX Scenic.
Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Hi, Mark. You okay?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
And all the way over in America, we're speaking to you. You're in a great part of America, Ohio. We know you're so close to Cedar Point.
Yeah, Kings Island's right down the street from my house. When I told my wife we were going to be able to see the Eiffel Tower from our new house, I don't think this is what she had in mind, but she hasn't left me yet, so I think we're okay.
That's fantastic. That's amazing. Well, the last time you were on Parkcast, it was COVID. It was 2020. Parks were closed. How has the theme park industry in America got on since then?
Yeah, it's undoubtedly no one could have planned for the COVID pandemic, right? That's not something you have an emergency fund for or you have some contingency plan for. That is a once in a lifetime event. Undoubtedly, themed entertainment was hit very hard, as was other industries like cruise ships and anything entertainment, any industry that draws guests together in large crowds, obviously. So since then, however, the themed entertainment theme park industry in the U.S. has come roaring back. We had all that pent up demand, very similar to Europe and Asia and other regions in the world. You know, we're not without challenges. You know, supply chain is still a challenge. Here we are 4 years later. And employment is still a challenge, you know, staffing the parks. One thing that I always and I never took for granted were the long operating hours that the theme parks in the United States have compared to, say, Britain, for example, that Alton Towers will close most days at 4 or 5 or 6 p.m. Yeah. Kings Island and Cedar Point regularly open until 10 p.m. And they still are. But a lot of other parks, because of various circumstances, have had to cut back on operating hours and even some parks cutting days from their schedule. So that's been interesting. But nonetheless, the parks are up and running and people are loving it more than ever.
I mean, it will be interesting what the parks do into with a 365 year with potential Universal Studios coming to the UK. But we certainly have here seen a lot more visitors at parks and a lot of parks building lots of stuff. But I know financially they were hits. Did you notice anything like that in America?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the 2020 season was more or less a wash across the board. Some parks were able to open for a partial season. A lot of parks located in states like California and New York just never opened. And some didn't even reopen until halfway through 2021. And that, you know, when you say you have a rainy spring or summer, you can't get those days back. But when you lose an entire season, that really, really takes an effect on that you can't get back. And again, that once in a lifetime event. But again, things are back and we're seeing the same growth here. You know, parks of all types and sizes adding rides, family rides, coasters, and new entertainment and shows and festivals. So we're in a really, really good pattern right now, I think.
Fantastic for the parks. So you haven't been on for 4 years, but for those who don't know, could you maybe explain what you're doing in the theme park industry?
Sure. So up until 2020, I was on the team with Ride Entertainment, which is a multifaceted group in Maryland, USA, that sells rides and has a operations division. They've got a bunch of small parks and whatnot. And then also have the division for Sky Coaster, which is the extra charge attraction. There are two in the UK, one in Oakwood in Wales, and then the South Pier up in Blackpool. It's that 3-2-1 fly, pull the ripcord and
off. Right, yeah.
So following that, I took a few months off, you know, just try to, you know, do some soul searching and figure out. I think I wasn't alone, myself and probably 100,000 of my close friends in the industry, all looking around, what's our next step? What are we doing? And I happened upon 3DX Scenic in Cincinnati. They were one of four companies that had a job listing on the IAPA job board. I think the other two listings or three listings are for maintenance managers for parks in Abu Dhabi or something like that. So it was totally random. So I sent my resume in and I got a call back from the then vice president here. We interviewed several times. I drove out to Cincinnati from Baltimore, where I was living, about 500 miles, and was offered a position in sales. And essentially, 3DX Scenic is it's born in theater. So they over the course of time, designed and implemented sets for live shows and events as the in-house scene shop for a live event production company here in Cincinnati. And both companies were subsequently bought by a group in Columbus called Live Technologies. And they're one of the largest live event production companies in the US. So they do touring acts, they do like Jeff Dunham, the ventriloquist, and large conventions and you know, with main sessions, breakout rooms and all that. And 3DX served primarily as their in-house scene shop. So I was brought on to continue the growth of what we're calling external projects, because my background is in themed entertainment, having sold rides for Ride Entertainment, and before that, Zamperla, way back almost 20 years ago when I first got into the industry. So really kind of trying to grow that segment of business, which ranges from large theme portals that guests walk in, whether you're going into a land or an attraction, parade floats. We have a fiberglass shop here, a composite shop. So we do character sculpts. Really, the sky is the limit here. And the challenge we have is that we sell an abstract product. So we sell a concept, which creative people can see a concept, but the people that push the pencils and look at the finances, they want to know what the product is and how it's going to grow their bottom line and what's my ROI on this. So we have a lot of product that I call indirect return on investment or ROI, photo opportunities, those type of things that, you know, you have tens or hundreds of thousands of shares on Instagram and Facebook and all across social media. If the park is smart or the attraction smart, they'll have their logo behind the element that we've created. You get that that return in free marketing, essentially.
Being a theme park enthusiast, theming is so important. It's part of what makes a theme park special or a themed area. It's getting lost and immersed in that world, isn't it? When growing up going to theme parks, was that what drew you to that side of things?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that, because I was just talking to my my two sons last night, and we just got back from an extended trip to Florida that included visits to Walt Disney World Resort and Universal Orlando Resort. And I think for them, because they have a much stronger, I think kids today have a stronger emotional connection with brands than I did when I was younger. I grew up watching Tom and Jerry and Scooby-Doo and, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, we call them here in the States, Bugs Bunny. But today, you know, just with the Netflix and, you know, all the streaming content, the instant gratification, I think our younger generation has really grown attachment to brands. And when a park can deliver that in an immersive environment, like the Wizarding World of Harry Potter or Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, where you're a guest in a park, but you're also the star in a show or a film. You truly feel you're not just on a back lot. You feel like you're walking into that experience and you're riding attractions or eating food or seeing entertainment. And I truly believe it both increases the guest satisfaction, and it also increases length of stay, which length of stay has a direct connection to per capita spending. So all that is very critical. And just watching how my kids react to it, that's sort of my research and development team. I watch what they do and how they react to things. And I have a lot of takeaways from that.
So with the projects you've done, Could you tell our audience some of the things and the places that you've been able to do and work?
Yeah, sure. A lot of the work that we do is we're hired as a subcontractor, and we have very, very strict non-disclosure agreements. So unfortunately, a lot of the larger projects we're involved in, we're not allowed to talk about, but of the direct to the directly contracted projects we can. The largest themed entertainment project in 3DX's history was completed over the course of 2021 through 2022. And that was the complete rebranding of the Aquatica Water Park in San Diego, California, in Chula Vista, which is just outside of San Diego, for United Parks, which was then called SeaWorld Parks and Attractions. And essentially, they turned it into the second Sesame Place Park, which had been a tremendous success, the original one that opened in 1980, just north of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I think the SeaWorld team saw the success that Legoland was having in Carlsbad, which is located just 30 minutes north of San Diego, and really wanted to tap into that market, you know, having that hybrid family park, water park with an iconic brand tied in. And the job they did was just seamless. It was perfect, because you would have no idea walking in Sesame Place San Diego today that 1 year prior to it opening, it was a very nice, but, you know, generic tropical themed water park, which, let's face it, there are dozens and dozens of water parks like Typhoon Lagoon and others that are themed after the tropics, because it makes sense. It ties in with a wave pool and water attractions. But now you've got a collection of about 10 family attractions, including a Zier roller coaster, family coaster, a bunch of flat rides from Zamperla and Chance. And then we did a dozen character sculpts. We did a bunch of signage. And then chiefly we did the what's called the neighborhood, which is the Sesame Street neighborhood. So kind of like a small version of Hogsmeade, all of the stores and shops are in strategic locations exactly as they appear on the set as you're watching the show. So Hooper's store is on the end of the block. And then you have Big Bird's Nest in the center, where Big Bird and Snuffleupagus make appearances through the day. And, you know, the 3 to 7 or 8 year olds, that's a target market for, or even younger than three, Sesame Place. The kids just go crazy for it, because it's like their dreams are coming to life right in front of them. So it's really, and I have to tell you, like, that was for our team one of the most gratifying experiences, because that was a really long, hard project. And I always say to people, the best part of the job when you complete it, you're at media day and you stand at the exit, or you're observing people interacting with what you've fabricated and done, and seeing the smiles makes all of the stress and the headaches and the deadlines and the budgets worth it.
Oh, that must be amazing. Just something that you've created in a theme park that is being enjoyed by so many people. That must be an incredible experience. And would you say that's the thing you enjoy most?
I would say I enjoy every part of the process of the projects we do, but I would probably put that at the top, because it's sort of the cherry on top of the sundae, right? It's like, we're done. We can celebrate. We can watch guests and, you know, enjoy what we've done. I also really, and our team really enjoys the collaborative sessions we have as a project is just kicking off, because a lot of the details and design and the creative piece isn't quite finalized when a project's awarded. It still has some moments and layers that we go through, and we really enjoy the collaborative approach. So
where can people find out about 3DX Scenic?
Yeah, our website, www.3dxscenic.com is an easy one. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And, you know, check us out there. And yeah, we're very active in the industry. So, and as careers go, you know, it's just been a great, for me, it's year 22 or 23 doing this now. So it's been fantastic.
What advice would you give someone wanting to work in that kind of career opportunity?
Yeah, I think it's kind of consistent across the board. Primarily, I always say, and I practice what I preach, is don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. There are a lot of people coming out of university that, you know, they want to immediately be a designer or an engineer, and they want to just go into creating. I and our team here, we have a firm belief that you need to be willing and able to get your hands dirty, and no one is above any task. And you go on the shop floor and you learn how to use tools, and you learn how to put things together, and you learn how things pack up. Because in our case, we have a tech office, right? So we've got designers that are sending design packets out to the floor. Unless you have experience being a fabricator, a carpenter out on the floor, the level of empathy isn't there. So, I mean, it really helps to have that knowledge of what it's like to get that design deck and then have to actually execute it. So I do believe that, you know, no matter what the age, get a job at a theme park. That's a great entry level. Get in there, learn the back of house, anything, whether it's park services, food and beverage, ride operations, entertainment. Don't be afraid, you know, grow your skill set, grow your people skills, because soft skills are very important as well. And let that grow. And then IAPA, which is the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions, has an ambassador program at all of their expos. I fully encourage anyone in the industry, young people, to reach out and apply for that, because you get to work the show, you get to go to the shows first off, which, you know, anyone that's been to an IAPA expo will tell you, it just make your head explode. You know, you see things you haven't thought about. So I get very, needless to say, I could talk forever on this topic, but I get very excited about it, because when I was coming up in the industry, which was back in the late 90s, there weren't really mentors, there weren't really people, you know, enthusiasts, let's say, and I was an enthusiast coming into the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, people kind of treated it, it's just a job. You know, I got a job as a ride operator when I was 16, and I got promoted over and over and over again. And now I find myself the general manager of a park. And there's nothing wrong with that, because, you know, you have to know how to run the park and you have to know the finance piece of it and all that. But it's like anything else. If you perform a job without passion, it's eventually going to show. And so use your passion, use it wisely, and you can find yourself a very rewarding career in this industry, whether it's on the operations or supplier side.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mark, when I was a teenager, it wasn't cool to be into theme parks. and we're talking late 90s, early noughties. I've been passionate about this for years and I love going to theme parks. And now with YouTube, you can sit, watch POVs. You could be over in America watching vlogs of people. But when you were growing up, what park got you into theme parks?
Yeah, I grew up on Long Island, New York, about 20 miles east of New York City or Manhattan, and right on the border of Nassau and Queens. And so this was the late 70s, early 80s when my grandparents and my parents would take me. So we had a local park called Nunley's, which was just a small kiddie park. It's not there anymore. But that's where my grandparents put me on the carousel for the first time, I think at age two, and I was instantly hooked. And then we also had Adventureland, which is in Farmingdale, New York, and Rye Playland, which is up in Rye, New York. And then the large park for the New York Metro that I would go to often was Six Flags Great Adventure, which, you know, as everyone knows today, is still, as of today, home to the world's tallest coaster for the time being. Yeah. Those were the type of experiences. And then travel wise, we'd go to Walt Disney World every couple of years and, you know, up to the mountains in upstate New York where the Great Escape is. But I do want to make one comment, because you brought up an interesting point on how it wasn't cool to be an enthusiast and now it seems like it is. So I think it's like any other subculture. As people become aware that they're not alone, right? That there are other people that are just as odd as you, or I don't know what the word is, but just something you have in common, then all of a sudden you can almost breathe a sigh of relief, because you don't feel like, oh, I'm the only one that this is all I think about or whatnot. So in the late 70s, when the American Coaster Enthusiast was formed, there was a marathon at King's Dominion on Racer 75, a very famous event. And the founders of ACE got together. They didn't know. And they said, hey, we should form a club. Great. That leads to, you know, online message boards, which was the big thing in the late 90s. It was Wreck Roller Coaster and Ultimate Roller Coaster and a lot of those. That led to social, that led to YouTube, where now you've got, you name it. I mean, there's so many channels out there. Theme Park Worldwide, for example, you know, they're all around the world. They've got, you know, I don't know how many subscribers at this point, but it's like anything else. It starts small and you put a lot of dedication and effort into it. And now, like you said, you can ride a coaster in South Korea from your couch, essentially. So it's just, you know, technology is always on our side.
Obviously, you've been on so many, and I know your favorite is Phoenix. Do you have a favorite particular type of coaster?
I'm old and boring. I like a good wooden coaster and I like a good hyper coaster. You know, it doesn't have to have inversions. I just like like a good straightforward ride, airtime, that kind of thing. So
fantastic.
Parkcast.
Hi, I'm John Wardley, and you're listening to Parkcast,
the UK's original theme park podcast.
So on Parkcast, we've been talking about everything new in the UK. We've been looking at all the new rides in Europe. What we haven't covered yet is the mecca of the roller coaster world that is the US. And Mark, you're going to tell us all about the new roller coasters in 2024.
Sure. So, I mean, it's another, as we climb out of the COVID pandemic, as you know, we had a couple of tough years there. 2024 to me feels like the first back to normal year where we've got across the board a really, really solid mix of attractions. And what I'm really jazzed about the most is it feels like the family ride sector is finally getting attention in the US, because for the longest mm-hmm. while, you know, I would call it Giga Coaster or Kiddie Ride, that there wasn't a lot in the middle for the yeah. parents to ride with their children. And given I have kids, as you do, Kev, mm-hmm. I feel like that's a very important part of the market, because that is the part of the market that is coming, you know, as a family unit. They're going to spend money. They're going to spend the whole day out together and make memories, versus the, say, teenager with a season pass that's coming to the park for the 85th time, you know, to ride the Swarm or to ride, mm-hmm. You know, whatever at Thorpe Park. It's a different market, right? So I'm very excited to see, you know, in the U.S., we've got Cedar Fair, for example, is investing in two Camp Snoopy areas. One, the original Camp Snoopy at Knott's Berry Farm, which is, yeah. as far as I can recall, the very first IP-based kids land, or one of the very first ones. I think there may All have right. been a few in Texas. It opened in 1983, and that really kind of proved that model. So then you had the Bugs Bunny worlds that followed at Six Flags and other parks. So Snoopy's Tender Paw Twister Coaster, say that five times. Yeah,
I'll let you say it.
It's a new Zamproa family coaster. It's one of the new generation ones that has the mid-course tire-driven launch on it. So similar to Daddy Pig's coaster at the Peppa Pig Park at Legoland, Florida. Same style layout, same style ride. The seats are larger, so you know, a full-size adult and child could ride together. So it's a great addition. And then at Kings Island, right down the road from our shop here, they have essentially added a new addition to Planet Snoopy. So Planet Snoopy won the golden ticket from Amusement Today for best kids area for, it had to have been almost two decades. I don't have it in front of me. But now they've added Camp Snoopy, which is a subsection to Planet Snoopy, which includes the second Vekoma Family Boomerang to open in the U.S. just a few weeks after Good Gravy at Holiday World, called Snoopy Soapbox Racers. So it's the perfect addition. So now they count their Zamproa Disco Coaster as a coaster. They've got a skater, the skateboard version.
Yeah.
So go by that. Now the family area has five coasters. Mm-hmm. Most people would say it's four coasters, but now you've got the Vekoma Junior Suspended. You have a Miler Kitty Coaster. You have the Junior Philadelphia Toboggan Coasters Wood Coaster, and now the Vekoma Family Boomerang. So it is literally a park within a park that, you know, family could spend a whole day in. So that's fantastic to see Cedar Fair doing
that. It's important, isn't it? Yeah. Like you say, with the family market. Obviously, we can talk about Phoenix Rising opening Busch Gardens. We've noticed there's quite a lot of investment into family coasters in the UK, particularly. I know Alton Towers went through a phase where they were focusing more on installing kind of thrill family coasters instead of your bigger overhead restraint coasters.
Sure.
I mean, even Hyperia, that's opened at Thorpe Park, because it's a lap bar, is a 1.30 meter attraction, which if you've got an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, they'll probably be tall enough to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a really good investment for parks to do.
It keeps a group together. You're not having to split up. You know, that's the most critical thing for me is, you know, when you go to a park and you have to say, okay, the two of us are going here and the three of us are going here, and then good luck meeting up, because, you know, it just gets crazy. So
we have that problem all the time.
And then, yeah, and this is a big year for Six Flags as well. You know, several of their parks are getting Zamproa Giant Discoveries, like Great America in Illinois and St. Louis. They're also adding a prototype from Intamin at Six Flags Over Georgia called the Georgia Surfer, which is an ultra surf, which is similar to I forget the model that Mock Rides calls it, like the ride at Wallaby Belgium.
And
Aquaman at Six Flags Over Texas. So it's a, sort of like a hybrid of that with their half pipe ride. So you're going to ride on like what looks like a surfboard with mm-hmm. the ring of seats that spin, and then you're going to go. The car itself, as far as I understand, won't physically hit the water. There'll be water jets that come up that will moisten riders, which is nice because they can control that. So for colder months, they can turn that off entirely. And then at Six Flags Great Adventure, probably one of the most exciting additions in New Jersey is the Flash Vertical Velocity, which will be only the second Vekoma Super Boomerang to debut in the world, built right over the front gate. I could say 3DX Scenic is actually doing some of the theming for that attraction. We're doing the entry portal as well as the interior queue line for that. So
Vekoma on the rise in the U.S.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Following in the success of Big Bear Mountain at Dollywood last year, a lot of people took note of that. You know, their rides now are smooth, they're dynamic, they're relatively easy for guests to get in and out, simple lap bar restraints or over-the-shoulder lap bar. So I could foresee them having many more installations in the future.
Because I feel like they were forgotten about for a while, because everyone, you know, was always looking at Intamin, B&M, even Mack as well. These are the coasters that theme parks have to have, and Vekoma is kind of forgotten about. But it's nice to see they're back again.
Yeah, you know? And anyone that thinks of, when they think of Vekoma, they think of Guterix. They need to get that out of their mind. That is not the company Vekoma is now. They're a very different company, and really good product line, and very operator friendly as well. Going back to Cedar Fair, Dorney Park in Pennsylvania hadn't had a new ground up coaster custom built for the park since 2005, believe it or not. That was a long time. So if you think Thorpe Park had to wait a long time, think about Dorney Park.
Yeah.
So Iron Menace debuted as the first B&M dive machine in the Northeast. And it's a fantastic coaster. It's a two-train operation. There's no mid-course block. So it's sort of like Emperor at SeaWorld San Diego. Mm-hmm. And very, very quick pacing, great airtime on the drop, great pace. You know, again, the pacing is fantastic. And the biggest bonus with this is they were able to get the height requirement down to 48 inches, which is essentially, like you were saying, like a 6-7-year-old kid essentially can ride this.
Wow, yeah.
Which is fantastic because, again, not having to split the parties up and go in separate directions. Yeah, nice. And then there's that new little addition up in Sandusky, but I don't know. You probably don't want to talk about that.
Well, you're more than welcome to.
Well, the reimagining of Top Thrill Dragster, which was Intamin Stratacoaster, the original Intamin Stratacoaster, hydraulic launch, 0 to 120 mile an hour launch in about 4 seconds. One of the best launches ever. Problematic coaster. I mean, there's no way of getting around it. It suffered from a lot of downtime, and guest satisfaction suffers because of that. My first time riding that back in 2003 and waiting close to four and a half hours, because you invest all that time and the ride goes down for an hour and you're going to wait it out because if you leave, you know, all that. So, so once you rode it, it was great, but getting to ride it was a challenge. So, the park brought Zamprola in, to revamp the ride.
Yeah.
And it's the debut of their new lightning trains, which, I was able to see at the IAPA, Attractions Expo last November, and they looked fantastic. Okay. I got to sit in the train, very comfortable, over-the-shoulder lap bar, easy for guests to get in and out, very accommodating for all different size guests. And so the ride now utilizes a triple swing launch with a 420-foot reverse spike, which dramatically changed the appearance of the skyline.
Yeah, do you remember going on Top Thrill for the very first time? How did you feel sat in the car on that launch?
It was one of those, you know, we don't have this a lot now because we've kind of hit a plateau where whatever it is, if it's budget or space, doesn't allow for a coaster much taller and much faster, you know, than these Stratacoasters that exist now. But whenever you do something for the first time, of course, there's going to be a little bit of anxiety and nervousness because, you know, I'd never done a coaster over 100 miles an hour, let's say. So,
yeah,
you know, I had ridden Accelerator at Knott's Berry Farm the year prior, which goes closer to 80, kind of like Stealth at Thorpe Park, about that scale of launch. And so, yeah, that first ride was something. And I remember just feeling my face was distorted from the speed. And this was confirmed when I got my, they took a photo of you as you were exiting the launch and as you were coming down the top hat. Iconic ride. And it's great that Zamprella and Cedar Fair were able to partner and bring the ride, you know, keep the ride and kind of invest in it and give it a new lease on life, because, you know, the physical appearance of the top hat, the location of it in the property, you know, it just would have been a shame to have lost that. So just the new story, the new theme, and now it being Top Thrill 2. So it's not tied to drag racing. It's just tied to it's racing in general. So who doesn't, you know, in America, car racing is big. So, you know, especially in the Midwest. So, big.
It'd be interesting to see if other Stratacoasters incorporate the backward launch up and down.
The sky's the limit until the budget says otherwise, I say. So there's enough smart people in this world that can research and develop anything. It's just a matter of, do you have the budget and do you have the space for it? And, you know, the new Intamin coaster Falcon's Flight is kind of showing what can happen when money is not, you know, seemingly an issue.
Yeah.
It's just build absolutely the biggest, tallest, fastest, longest, knock every, you know, possible record out at one time. But that's not usually reality, at least for projects here in North America.
Are there any other new coasters that you're really looking forward to going on?
Top Thrill 2, when we get up there, you know, we're hopeful that they'll have the issues worked out by then. I'm really looking forward to getting on that one. And I missed a few last year just because, you know, when taking over ownership of 3DX, I was kind of not stuck in Ohio, because that sounds bad, but I was at the shop more than I would normally have been out on the road visiting clients and having sales meetings. But I did not get to Hershey Park last year. And from all accounts, the Wildcat's Revenge RMC remake of the original GCI Wildcat coaster was fantastic. And Air Force One down in Georgia, that's one I did not get to last year as well. Other than that, yeah, we kind of checked off all the stuff we hadn't done yet in Orlando over the last week or so. So that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to see all the new things. We got to see DreamWorks Land at Universal Studios Florida, and got to finally ride Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rerun at Epcot, which, for my money, the best attraction at Walt Disney World now.
Fantastic.
It knocked Tower of Terror off of its high perch. So,
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you manage to do Tron as well?
Yeah.
Oh no. That doesn't sound like a positive.
It was fun. It was fun. With how Walt Disney World has these you know, the Genie Plus and the virtual queues, and the you almost have to go to university and take a class to understand what you have to do to ride things.
Yeah.
Guardians was easily worth any hassle. Tron was a fun ride. It was really good. It's just a little short. It's essentially a clone of the same attraction that opened at Shanghai Disneyland that, you know, it feels like an attraction in a lot of ways that's 7 years old. Whereas it's only because you have Guardians at Epcot that just feels so new and fresh and different.
Yeah.
The ride system is genius. The implementation of the screen effects is genius. And I'm not usually a big screen person on attractions. My kids echo that same comment, by the way. Like, we all looked at each other after getting off both attractions, and you know, one we immediately bought an individual Lightning Lane for, and the other one we said, okay, we're good. We can go do other stuff now. So, but people like Tron. It aesthetically is amazing. And I'm a big Daft Punk fan, so just hanging out there and listening to the music and absorbing the atmosphere was great. Not quite sure if it belongs at Magic Kingdom, but, you know, jury's out on
that. I think Tomorrowland is an interesting one at Walt Disney World, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Yesterdayland.
Yeah. When you're riding roller coasters, what is it you particularly look for? How do you rate it?
Okay, in my old age, I would say one thing that has a much higher level of importance to me than it did, say, 20 years ago is re-rideability factor. If it's something that I need to be instructed on how to ride, I'll probably opt out. I don't need to be told, put your head forward, put your left hand in the air with your right foot sticking forward and maybe your head won't get hit. I want to be able to just enjoy the attraction, you know, in today's day and age with the development of revolutionary restraints and other things that should be achievable on every level. So that's important. I also like an element of surprise that the designer puts in a ride, you know, whether it's an element you can see in plain sight that doesn't look like much, but then it ends up being a wow moment on the ride, or something in a show building. I think an attraction to be repeatable needs to be comfortable, but also needs to have a surprise element to it that really captures your, you know, excitement that makes you want to get back in the queue.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much for your time.
This is a lot of fun. Let's do it again soon.
We'll have to, Mark. There's so many other things we could talk about, and when time's short and time's difficult. But yeah, you're more than welcome to be back on the podcast. So thank you.
Podcast.
See, I told you, Mark is just such a great guy. He's an amazing enthusiast. We absolutely love having him on the show, and we will, of course, get him back on for another episode. We're going to have to. There's so much more that we need to discuss with him, especially given all the issues that, of course, Top Thrill 2 has been having. We'll be coming back to that next year, and I'm sure Mark will be getting on that as quickly as he can, so we'll be getting his thoughts on that, definitely. If you haven't already, do go back and listen to his previous episode from Series 1 of Parkcast, where he's chatting about different things in that as well. And if you did enjoy today, we do more of the same. We're going to have loads more episodes coming up, interviews with different people, and generally just chatting about the state of the theme park industry in the UK and abroad, new comings and goings, and anything else that might affect parks that, of course, we all like to go to and we're all very passionate about. So if you did enjoy it, you can click the subscribe button and you'll get a little notification every time we release a new episode. We'll be back next week, but for now, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.